Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, February 16, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Park District Chooses Water Park Design, by Justin Kahn, Decatur. The Decatur Park District Board of Commissioners chose not to play it safe with its $9.2 million water park slated to open at Nelson Park in 2018. The board picked a preliminary design, Option B, at Wednesday's meeting that included a water slide package with features not previously seen outside of Europe. I'd just as soon be first than be like everyone else, Commissioner Chris Riley said. Both options included a 25-yard lap pool, either 6 or 8 lanes, a 7,800-square-foot leisure pool with play structure, vortex, bench seating, and lily pad walk, and 1,600-square-foot sprayground wading pool. They were presented during an hour-long presentation by Architectural Expressions Managing Senior Partner Lawrence Livergood and Councilman Hunziker President Scott Hester. There were differences. The differences were in the water slide packages. The board chose option B, which included a freestyle stand-up slide, infinity jump slide, multi-racer slide, free-fall speed slide, and a high-fly slide. Option B only needs one 42-foot tower with several levels. Hester said there isn't a water park in the country with the slides in option B, although they've been in Europe for years, and there are 2 parks in the U.S. constructing similar features, neither in Illinois. We've been working with an industry provider who is bringing in some technology to North America from Europe, Hester said. The manufacturer has been producing these types of rides for 30 years. This gives you the chance to be more of a trendsetter in the municipal environment. This gives you a chance to have a destination facility that people will drive from 30, 40, and even 50 miles away to experience. Park Board President Bob Briley II said having a destination facility has been the district's goal with this project from the beginning. This option would bring people to Decatur, Briley said. This pool is for the people of Decatur, but it's also for the economy of Decatur and the economy of the Park District. Decatur Park District Chief Financial Officer Rodney Boer said Option B would give the district a better chance to bring in money. The revenue generation for day-to-day operations is significantly better in Plan B, Boer said. Janae Petty of Decatur said she was impressed by the preliminary design. This looks awesome, Petty said when shown the Option B rendering. This will definitely draw a lot of people. It has a whole lot more than Fairview. This is something the parents are going to be willing to take their kids to, and it will keep kids off the street and give them something to do. Brian Yowell of Decatur has 2 daughters, 12 and 2, who will be excited about the water park. You better take us, 12-year-old Brooklyn said to her dad. I've been waiting for a long time for them to bring water slides back to Decatur, Yowell said. Miranda Jenkins of Decatur said she liked the multi-racer slide on which 3 people can race, with the time recorded and posted on a screen at the end of the slide. That will be a lot of fun for a group of kids to go on together, Jenkins said. Jenkins also liked the sound of the infinity jump slide, on which it will appear to riders like they're sliding into the mouth of a shark or off the side of the slide. Brooklyn said she'd avoid the high fly slide. The slides sound fun, but that one sounds terrifying, she said. Yowell said he also liked the idea of the multi-race slide, but admitted it will be difficult to judge the slides until he sees them. It's kind of hard to picture them since they haven't been around here before, Yowell said. Also included in the $9.2 million construction cost is a 4,500-square-foot building with locker rooms, concession stand, and administrative offices. Coming out of that building, swimmers will walk up to a 7,800-square-foot leisure pool with 0 beach entry. The leisure pool will contain an interactive play structure in about 12 inches of water, with smaller water slides for children too young for the bigger slides. as well as other features, including water spouts and an overhead water tipping mechanism. The larger slides will have a requirement for height that's typically 48 inches, and that's cutting out anyone under the age of 7 or 8, Hester said. This gives an option for the 6 and under crowd. The leisure pool will also have a 5,550 square foot wet deck where users can sit in shallow water. You can put lounge chairs in there and it provides a passive activity, Hester said. People can sunbathe, and we can also put shade structures in there. Further out in the leisure pool will be deeper water, about 3.5 feet, for open swim, water volleyball, and water basketball. In that area will also be a bench seating area and a water vortex, a play area with moving water. At the southwest part of the leisure pool will be a lily pad walk, floatables tethered to the pool floor kids can walk across. Just to the west of the leisure pool will be a 1,600-foot spray ground wading pool designed for babies and toddlers with a water depth of 12 to 18 inches. South of the kiddie pool will be a 25-yard lap pool. It will be either 6 or 8 lanes. 6 lanes is the minimum target, but 8 lanes is where we'd like to be, depending on the bids that come in, Hester said. The 2 additional lanes will be an alternate bid item. The water park won't include a lazy river, a common complaint on social media. That would be nice, Petty said. Throw in a lazy river, and we wouldn't have to go to Knights Action Park, Yowell said of the Springfield Amusement Park, visible from Interstate 72. We went to Knights Action Park this summer. But this looks pretty nice. It will be good to have something like this here. Jenkins said she didn't think the lack of a lazy river would keep people from attending. Parents want the lazy river, not kids, Jenkins said, and it's the kids who really decide where to go. Option A had a 42-foot open body slide, a 32-foot enclosed body slide, a 32-foot drop slide, a bowl slide, and 2 32-foot speed slides, emptying into an 1,860-square-foot plunge pool. It included 2 towers, a 28-foot tower for the open body and enclosed body slides, and a 34-foot tower for the drop slide, bowl slide, and speed slides. Hester said those slides were like the ones at water parks in Springfield, Champaign, Urbana, and others around the state. Those slides are a pretty common approach in a municipal market, Hester said. These are the types of rides and activities that you'll see at most other municipal aquatic facilities. While option A would have been approximately $500,000 cheaper than option B, the plunge pool was a necessity in option A. In option B, the 1,950-square-foot plunge pool isn't needed to accommodate the slides. If it is included, it would have options for diving boards, climbing walls, and a zip line. But Hester said those options could fit in the lap pool if the board preferred to eliminate the plunge pool to save money. The board would also have the option not to include all 5 slides in order to limit costs, with the option to add the slide in a later phase. Councilman Hunsaker and Architectural Expressions will go forward with design and return at a later meeting for final approval, with the bidding process to follow. Livergood, Hester, and Decatur Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger said it was important to make decisions quickly because of the time it takes to get approval from the Illinois Department of Health. They could take 2 to 3 months, Clevenger said. That's why we need to keep this process moving on our end. Construction is expected to begin in early May, with the goal to have it ready for the 2018 summer. The Fairview Park pool will stay open in 2017, then close in 2018 when the new water park opens. The water park will be funded by a $10.7 million alternate revenue bond to be repaid over 20 years. Burr has said the district's budget includes money to repay the bond without cutting out other park improvements or, most importantly, raising the tax levy. Student of History, John Regan, Still Going at 106, by Teresa Churchill, H&R Senior Writer, Decatur. His birth, a late Valentine for his parents in 1911, John Regan may not know why he's walked this earth for so long, but has no doubts about what to do with the time he has left. He's going to keep going to the Decatur Public Library 5 days a week to cull articles from past editions of the Herald and Review via microfilm and compile them into scrapbooks. "Most people just live," he said. "I'm a very old man, and I'm still trying to do things that have some significance." Regan broke from his routine Wednesday, however, to celebrate his 106th birthday with family, friends, and neighbors over lunch at Bob Evans. A total of 18 well-wishers joined him for the party, including a niece, great-nephew, and their spouses, 5 women from his father's boyhood home of Kenny, and 5 friends from Decatur's Holiday Hills neighborhood, where Regan has lived for the past 45 years. "We live at the corner of Holly and Holly," Judy Cornell said. "When he's out walking, we see him stop and rest there in front of our house." Regan's penchant for keeping his mind and body active has no doubt extended his life, but niece Bonnie Cox, 78, of Peoria, believes something else is in play. "He was blessed with good genes," Cox told the group. "His parents lived into their 90s, and so did his sisters." Born the youngest of 4 children on February 15, 1911, to John F. Regan Sr. and his wife Addie, Regan moved with his family from Mount Sterling to Decatur in 1919 after his dad retired from practicing law. One of his fondest memories is how he befriended James Parsons while walking to Roosevelt Junior High from the family home at 1349 West Wood Street. "I'd walk on the edge of the railroad track because it was slanted to Roosevelt," Regan said. "There came a black boy, and I helped him get into the school band. We both played cornet." The 2 friends went on to graduate with the Decatur High School class of 1929 and attended Millikan University together. Parsons School, opened in 1966, was named after Regan's friend, who 5 years earlier was the first black appointed as a federal district judge. Parsons died in 1993 at age 81. Like his father and his friend, Regan earned a law degree, but after completing his studies at the University of Denver, he spent time traveling the Midwest, taking photographs, and writing articles for trade journals. "I'd go into a town, look around, and see what I could see that was interesting, look at the papers, and pick out some place to write a story about," Regan said. He stayed at YMCA's because he didn't make a lot of money. A thief stole his typewriter while he was in Indianapolis, and although he was able to buy it back from a pawn shop, he decided to call it quits as a journalist and return home to practice law. Regan worked in Sullivan and then in Decatur, marrying Evelyn Montroy in 1942 after completing basic training with the Army. He served 3.5 years during World War II before resuming his law practice in Decatur. His work ranged from income tax work to civil rights cases, and his philanthropy paid for more than $50,000 worth of civic improvements in the village of Kenny. He still owns Bloomingdale Farm, west of town, which has been in the Regan family since 1840. Ron Sams, his tenant farmer, was among Wednesday's party guests. Retired since 1987 and a widower since 1996 with no children, Regan has busied himself with various projects, including family genealogy, a 2-volume pictorial directory of the Holiday Hills neighborhood, and newspaper scrapbooks that he gets copied and shares. These days, he relies on neighbor Sheila Rumble to drive him, prepare his food, and clean his house, and a walker to help him get around whenever he's away from home. "I have arthritis in my legs and abdomen, and I'm not very steady on my feet," Regan said. More troubling to him is the worsening of his eyesight, which makes it harder to keep going as a lifelong student of history. But his mind's eye still sees 2020, and his right hand sometimes reaches out as if to touch the things he's seen. Kenny's downtown, a block or so long, had various kinds of stores there. Now they don't have any stores, and there's nowhere to sit down, Regan said. So I bought a number of benches and had signage put up where there used to be an organ factory out there, where the first house was built, where the grade school used to be. And then there is one house that was there before there was any Kenny. Abraham Lincoln stayed there. Local lawmakers mixed on Rauner's budget address, by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. Decatur. State Representative Bill Mitchell heard reasons for optimism as he listened from his desk at the Illinois Capitol during Governor Bruce Rauner's third budget address. I thought he was optimistic as he could be with the situation facing our state, said Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth. We've got to work together and compromise, and I enjoyed that general tenor that I picked up during the speech. As Rauner delivered his speech at the front of the Illinois House of Representatives chamber, the state has gone 19 months without a complete budget. The impact of the impasse can be felt across central Illinois and the rest of the state, where everything from social services to higher education have had to make cuts to offset the loss of funds from the state. Whereas Mitchell heard optimism, other state lawmakers said they heard more of the same from the governor. The governor spent most of his time on themes that he has brought forward time and again, year after year, said State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat from Bunker Hill. So there wasn't much budget discussion in what he put forward today in his speech. Menar added that he was concerned over the perceived secrecy of the governor's proposed budget, which had not been seen by his colleagues until after the address. Not everyone was as critical of Rauner. State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, said he appreciated the governor presenting ideas for a budget bargain, such as program cuts and reforms to workers' compensation and property taxes. Sue Shearer, a Decatur Democrat, said she appreciated parts of Rauner's speech, including more funding for education. But she shared Menar's sentiment about not yet seeing the budget plan in writing and said the education funding plan did not focus enough on schools that are less well off. We are talking about schools with 5-lane swimming pools and computer labs that are going to get more money, along with the poor little schools that don't even have textbooks, she said. We can do better. Brad Holbrook, Republican of Shelbyville, noted Rauner quoted Abraham Lincoln in calling for lawmakers to rise to the occasion of a difficult situation with ideas and action. I agree with workers' comp and pension reforms and common sense changes in regulations that the governor outlined in his speech today, said Holbrook, who serves on the Government Consolidation and Modernization Committee. I continue to be ready to work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to move our state forward and grow more jobs. Child Pornography Charges Leveled at Decatur Man, 19, by Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Hunter Rausch, 19, of Decatur, was arraigned Wednesday on 7 felony counts of child pornography for allegedly uploading videos of young children engaged in sex acts and making them available for distribution. Rausch, who was serving a 2-year court supervision term for a juvenile conviction on child pornography charges in a 2015 case, is being held in the Macon County Jail on $100,000 bond. The Decatur police executed a search warrant at Rausch's East Side residence the morning of February 9th. Officers seized cell phones, computers, and external media devices. Because the children who were victimized in the videos were younger than 13, each count is Class X, carrying a penalty of 6 to 30 years in prison if Rausch is convicted. Police Detective Ron Borowicz was informed of the child pornography case through a tip given to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC, which was then transmitted to the Illinois Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. Dropbox, Inc., a repository for digital files, reported to the NCMEC on November 2nd that the company would turn over files and other information on a service user who was in the possession, manufacture, and distribution of child pornography, said an affidavit by Borowicz. The individual who was uploading the files had registered as Hunter Rausch. The Internet Protocol address associated with the file uploads showed a location in Decatur. Of 37 files turned over to NCMEC, 36 of the files were video-type files that contained material that can be defined as child pornography, Borowicz wrote in his statement. One folder, created by the user identified as Rausch, was titled Cheese Pizza Videos 2. It contained 22 of the 36 videos that were sent to the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. In response to an inquiry from Borowicz, center officials said some of the videos were from series previously identified by other law enforcement agencies. A 42-second long video depicting a child engaged in a sex act with an adult was from a known series identified as Dora Sarah. The victim was about 8 years old at the time of the production, according to a law enforcement officer. Another officer had made contact with a victim depicted in videos in the Tara series. She was between the ages of 5 and 9 years old when law enforcement made contact with this victim. A 92-second video shows her being sexually assaulted by an adult. In a 44-second video, in which a girl younger than 10 is sexually assaulted, the identifying agency was the Swedish police. Rausch is due in circuit court March 8th for his preliminary hearing. Familiar Name Nets Macon County B Title by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer, Decatur. The Hasnain Spelling Bee dynasty still stands for the last year. Once again, after a hard-fought battle that went 22 rounds, Rabia Hasnain, like her brother and sister before her, emerged triumphant. Rabia, an eighth grader at Maroya Forsyth Middle School, went to the National Spelling Bee in Washington, D.C. last year, and while she didn't make the finals, she met her goal to not hear the bell, the signal that a speller has misspelled a word. Her brother Yasser was a four-time regional bee winner, and their sister Isra is a past county bee winner, too. Mom Wissam Hasnain said Yasser misses the bee now that he's too old to compete and that he wanted to take the day off to cheer on his little sister. "We said no, school is too important," Wissam Hasnain said. "Yasser is involved with sports and doing very well academically in high school, while Isra is in college studying pre-med." Hasnain said Isra keeps changing her mind about what area to specialize in, but she's got plenty of time before she has to settle on one. This will be Rabia's last year in the Bee, and she and second-place finisher Maya Yoginathagaram, a seventh grader at Maroya Forsyth, went 7 rounds head-to-head to decide the winner. During those rounds, they high-fived each other on every correctly spelled word, and when Rabia missed peacoat in round 19, Maya looked as stricken as if she'd missed it herself. Then, Maya missed Hanseatic in round 20, giving Rabia another chance. She correctly spelled Accelerando, and Maya missed Shamasan. But to be the winner, Rabia had to spell one more word correctly, which she did, acing Onyxus. And those weren't even the toughest words. Matthias Adams, a seventh grader at Mount Zion, drew several really difficult words, but when he stepped up to the microphone in round 11, and pronouncer Matt Lovelace, news anchor at WAND-TV, gave him the word Weissenichtu, Matthias looked dumbfounded. He wasn't the only one. Lovelace had to take a moment to practice the pronunciation before giving it to Matthias. Matthias chuckled a little, asked for a definition and a language of origin, then said almost to himself, I know this, before spelling it, slowly but perfectly. The auditorium, which was almost entirely silent for the lengthy spelling bee so as not to interrupt contestants' concentration, applauded him. The word means an imaginary or unknown place, and is used colloquially to describe where a person's thoughts go in a daydream. 9 spellers will advance to the Regional B, scheduled for 9 a.m. March 18th in the auditorium at Eisenhower High School, 1200 South 16th Street. In order, they are Rabia Husnain, 8th grade, and Maya Yothinagaram, 7th grade, both of Moriah Forsyth. Aidan Turgut, 7th grade, Mount Zion. Sarvesh Aravarasu, 5th grade, Our Lady of Lourdes. Olivia Swords, 8th grade, Dennis School. 6th place tie, Matthias Adams, 7th grade, Mount Zion, and Jake Blackburn, 8th grade, Garfield Montessori School. Megan Thompson, 8th grade, Our Lady of Lourdes, and Zach Jolly, 7th grade, Warrensburg, Latham. Parolee crashes into pole, leaves scene, police say, by Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer, Decatur. Police were sent to the scene of a hit-and-run crash on the city's east side about 9 a.m. February 6th, in which a white SUV reportedly struck a fence and utility pole before it was driven from the scene. A few minutes later, officers found Bradford L. Randall, 22, in a white Mitsubishi in the 1400 block of East Condit Street, about 3/4 mile from the crash scene at North 19th and East Locust Streets. Randall, a parolee who recently served prison terms for aggravated battery and identity theft, initially denied that he drove into a pole. But after he was told by police that witnesses could identify his vehicle, he admitted that he did hit a pole and then left the scene, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Larry Brooks. Randall, who reportedly handed an empty half-pint bottle of vodka to an officer from his vehicle, was arrested and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on $10,000 bond. His breath test at the jail showed a blood alcohol content of 0.10%, over the 0.08% limit for drivers. He was found to be without a driver's license or insurance. He did have a metal pipe in his pocket, which he admitted using for smoking cannabis, Brooks wrote in his statement. Randall was arraigned Tuesday on felony counts of aggravated DUI alcohol, aggravated driving with a blood alcohol count of 0.08 or over, and leaving the scene of an accident with property damage. Randall, who has 4 felony convictions since 2013, was convicted of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon March 20th for taking part in an attack on a 32-year-old man January 14th, 2015. The victim was beaten by 4 men who struck him with a metal baton and kicked and punched him in his head and body. The victim suffered 2 broken ribs, a punctured lung, wounds to his head requiring 14 staples, 3 broken fingers, and a forehead injury requiring 4 stitches. In his most recent case, Randall is due in court March 1st for his preliminary hearing. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review for Thursday, February 16th, 2017.